Fred Film Radio. This is Chiara Nicoletti from the 72nd Venice International Film Festival, and today I'm honored to be with Atom Egoyan, director of Remember. Welcome.
Hi, nice to be here.
So Atom, how did it all start? How did you decide to work on this story? Very particular, because the protagonist is, let's say, an old man seeking revenge.
He's an old man seeking revenge, but he's also an old man who basically is suffering from dementia. So even though he has a strong sense of needing to avenge the death of his family at Auschwitz, he thinks he's found the person who's responsible. He goes on this mission to kill this person, gets a gun, but he keeps forgetting why he has a gun. He keeps forgetting why he's on this mission. And so it's a very strange and original look at memory, but also trauma and this idea of revenge and justice. It's a simple story, but it has a lot of different levels of meaning. So I think from the very beginning there's been elements of how to create tension through someone who's looking for something that is slightly out of reach and who becomes more and more desperate, and that despair fuels an anxiety and that creates a tension. It's that creation of anxiety. So it's unsettling, you know.
Talking about the tension, I was thinking that, first of all, I wanted to ask if you decided from the beginning to always focus on him and not to use, for example, flashbacks or the things that happened, and deciding also that you're imagining what happened, but in the end you don't even really know what's written in the letter until almost the end. So that's the first question. Do you think that it helped? Did you decide that because it helped create the tension, the right tension? Maybe the flashbacks and all this stuff would have distract us some way.
I think the flashbacks would have been reductive in a way, because, I mean, we don't need... They would also have been problematic, because we would have been presenting, you know, information that wasn't true, you know, and I'm not so sure if that character is in a place where he could even construct flashbacks. So for me to present them would have been disingenuous, because he can't experience them himself, and it would have been like a kind of a big, you know, lie in a way. It would have been like a trick. And that's not to say that you can't use that as a filmmaker. I mean, there are people who you can have a lying flashback. I mean, Chloe, you know, had lots of lying flashbacks, things that, you know, we find out didn't happen, but they existed in the imagination of Julianne Moore as she's hearing these stories. So she's imagining those scenes. Otherwise, it's just a gimmick, a trick, right?
But, you know, your mind can play tricks on you, even especially, I don't know about dementia, but I can imagine that you can mix things.
Well, I do think that there's a lot of things that are happening on the soundtrack, which you know, for instance, I mean, when we were shooting at this location, the house near the open mine, and I heard the sound of the siren. The siren is there to suggest an explosion is about to happen, but it sounds exactly like a type of siren you would hear at a concentration camp. Right. So, like, there are moments where there are sounds which can be interpreted another way, but they're usually rooted in something real as well, you know. So that was more evocative to me. And of course, the music, the soundtrack, you know, it evokes certain things, but that's more abstract.
Did you do a lot of research on the topic?
Boy, I don't know if there was anything that I mean, I did a lot of research into, you know, this phenomenon. I mean, there were a lot of Nazis that were let into the U.S. I mean, it's shocking. There's a great book that just came out by Eric Bleibtreu called Nazis Next Door, The Nazi Next Door. And it's shocking, really, because, I mean, as, you know, there were Jews still being kind of held in the camps. The CIA and the Pentagon were just funneling in all the top scientists of the Nazi regime, all the people who designed the concentration camps, who designed all the military machinery. They were brought in and immediately set to work for the U.S. government. So I was just horrified by, you know, like, how cynical that was, you know. And, you know, so maybe that's what you're referring to. I mean, I
if you based, you know,
well, no, I mean, it's a fictional story. It's an entirely fictional story. And I think that, you know, like, I don't think anything quite like this has happened, except that there are obviously You know, like you look at the case of Oscar Grunig this summer, you know, there are you know, people who are still being tried, you know, and time is running out, and some of them are not capable of, you know, standing to trial and or not surviving the trial process. So, you know, it's the last moments that we can still process this in a through judicial system.
In the end of the film, I don't know why, but I couldn't help but thinking about the their families, just to not to spoil the end, like the legacy, the right. Bad legacy in this case that they have to live with. Yes. Now.
Yes, because these children are seeing a primal traumatic scene. I mean, like, what could be more traumatic than what they're witnessing? And so there is this transmission of trauma in the most horrifying way, mm-hmm. you know. And it was very interesting, you know, as we were editing it, because I decided not to shoot their reaction. I mean, I shot the reactions, but we were cutting it, and it just felt it was more interesting to just have the camera move slowly onto Chris and just imagine, you know, what their reactions are. And it's horrifying, because that will then be transmitted as well. That's a scene that they will never erase.
Plus all their memories that they have from the past will be restructured, let's say.
Yeah, unspeakable, right? That they will remember. Yeah.
Was Christopher Plummer always your first choice for the protagonist?
I mean, I work with him on Ararat, and I since that time I've read this wonderful book he wrote about his career, and I've interviewed him publicly, and I've gotten to know him better, and it just, you know, he felt there was something about his manner that I felt would be absolutely right, you know, like for this character, it felt like no one else could do this. Mm-hmm. So I was privileged to, you know, it's happened to me a couple of times where I've written parts and I just, or I've read scripts and I go, this, you know, this is the person it has to be, and then you just pray that they respond and that they're available, you know. There's something about his energy which is kind of, there's this kind of a patrician kind of elegance to him which just feels right, you know. Yes. And there's also something interesting, because we know he's not Jewish, and we're wondering, well, how is he playing a Jew? And then we understand the reality, and it's kind of makes sense at the end, right?
Yes, definitely.
Both times I've worked with him, he's been sort of like not the usual type of role, right? Uh-huh. So yeah.
Plus, he's very active, and yet to play as he's not.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, this guy is like a machine. It's unbelievable. I'm just in awe of like his ability to memorize lines, his ability to kind of physically just do these things, and it's quite amazing. He's amazing. You could see from, you know, today, like I,
yeah,
like it's, I don't know what time that interview is in the morning, but he's up and he's ready to go.
I was curious, I was discussing the film with some colleagues, we all went to watch the film, and one said something that I'm going to tell you. So he said, do you think, did you get the ending before the very end? Mm. And I said yes. So he said, why don't you ask him? So I'm asking him, why did you decide to put like sort of a clarification on something that some of us had already...
I mean, I think it's okay to get it. And I think actually maybe the film is more interesting when you know it, because then when you watch it again, I mean, it becomes even more troubling, you know, like... you know, it's. I mean, there is this pleasure in the twist if you like that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately, that's not really. I mean, twists are. I mean, the only twist that I've ever written myself that I really loved was the end of Exotica, like where you find out that she's the babysitter. Uh-huh. But that came very late in the process. But normally, I'm not. It's not about twists for me. Like, you know, so I appreciate the thrill of it, but actually, I kind of prefer if you know it beforehand and you still see what. How he behaves, you know. When did you figure it out?
I mean,
or when did you suspect?
I figured it out when I think I was supposed to figure it out.
Right,
so
right.
when but then there's a part in the clinic when the friend tells the truth to everybody,
right.
But I figured that was the connection.
That's a coda. I mean, I think we all know by that point. I mean, that's just a. I mean, what I love is just how emotional he is there. I mean, like he's for the first time we're seeing his emotion, and that he's still carrying the pain of that. That's why that shot is important with Landau.
That's why for me the film is about one man seeking revenge for what. Happened to his family, and another man seeking finding revenge on himself. So I don't know how to explain English.
That's really well put.
That's my answer.
I'm going to put that on the poster. I mean, he is ultimately chasing himself, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we realize that's the only solution we can find.
And of course, now that I see the film, I mean, people, it is thrilling, and it's kind of like it's great to have that experience, but there's still something. I mean, the story is still really interesting. If you think he is doing what he's doing, but the twist is kind of amazing because it does kind of like fold in on itself in a different way, and you have to rewatch it and
anyway. But there's the end that you were expecting, and there's the end that you were expecting.
That's
so
right.
We have two.
Right.
Thank you, Atom Egoyan, for being here with us on Fred Film Radio. This is Chiara Nicoletti from the 72nd Venice International Film Festival. For Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio. 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.